listening to WDEL Saturday Hotspot. Here's Frank Gregory.
It's the 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Fever, and we're on the phone with Sean Burns. He's a film critic based out of Boston, does some stuff for WBUR, which I'm going to check out, and also is on Spliced. Give me the website again.
SplicedPersonality.com.
Personality.com. Check that out. I did.
I named it in the old days when we used to have to splice film back before everything went digital. I didn't think the name would go so obsolete. I used to be a projectionist. So.
Okay. Wow. Is that true? I mean, in like a movie theater?
Yeah. I've worked in movie theaters.
Have to know when to start the next reel to keep the movie with. Is that true that happens? That movie?
Well, there are two setups. There's a reel-to-reel setup, and then there's also most theaters had a big platter where you would put all the movies together onto this one giant platter, but you had to splice them together in order.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people didn't.
We had said that movies in '76, the movies was considered a great year, but the movies that were put out in '76 would play on television. I mean, Rocky works on TV, Network works on TV, All the President's Men works on TV. Then in '77, Star Wars doesn't really work on television, Sean.
Yeah.
You have to see it in the big screen. And to see Travolta and that dance floor and everything like that, that's something that the big screen would have worked better on that. Do you agree that the filming of that, it needed the big screen?
Yeah, well, I don't think anything needs it, but I always prefer the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually funny. The reason I wrote the BUR article you read about Saturday Night Fever was it ended up showing at the Harvard Film Archive, which was a riot to see it at Harvard.
Well, tell us that story. Why was it a riot to see it at Harvard?
Well, it was part of this series they'd put together about the gritty movies of the 70s.
Right.
And there were films like Blue Collar and Salo, the really like audience-upsetting films.
Right.
And they had put Saturday Night Fever in there sort of to restore its place, because it really belongs there. I mean, it's very much like, some would say it's even a ripoff of Mean Streets a little bit.
As a period piece, as a film that defines the 70s, Fever's got to be in there, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
What else would be the definition? Because I thought about this while I was driving. The 60s can be defined, in my eyes, in two movies, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. Easy Rider has to be one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have The Graduate. Am I missing something there in the 60s, Sean?
I don't know. I'm bad at these lists, because you start thinking, oh, well, then this one too, and then do they have to have been made in the 60s?
But it sort of defined the decade. I mean, Easy Rider was the mm-hmm. after the family sprawl of the 50s, and the disenchantment of the 60s was sort of defined by Easy Rider and the hippie movement and things like that. And then The Graduate with the sexual awakening, I thought sort of worked.
That sort of dissatisfaction.
Right. But then in the 70s with Fever in 77, it was the fashion and the lifestyle and things like that. That's why I think it sort of works a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time capsule.
Mm-hmm. You've seen things with Travolta. Now, Travolta sort of distances himself from Saturday Night Fever. I mean, he's certainly proud of the work and being in it. But why do you think he has sort of a disenfranchisement from Saturday Night Fever these days?
Well, I know his girlfriend was dying while they were making
yes.
the movie. And that can't be an easy thing to... The same thing with Ray Liotta and Goodfellas. People always talk about it. He's like, my mother died while we were filming. So, they don't have the same memories of these things that we do. It was a job to them.
Right. That's one of the great... Vinnie Barbarino was such an iconic television character. Mm-hmm. And then he's in The Boy in the Plastic Bubble, which is a really underrated... television.
Robert Reed, man.
Robert Reed and Diana Hyland, who played his mother. John Travolta was actually dating her. She had breast cancer while she was, and she died very shortly after that in 77, if my memory serves correct.
Yeah, and that was when the whole fever thing hit. So I assume it's just associated in his mind with.
Well, you could be right. Here's a trivia question. I got a couple trivia questions. You ready to go, Sean?
All right.
Ready?
All right.
Diana Hyland was the original mother in what television show?
Oh, I should know this. I don't.
She was the original mother in Eight is Enough.
Right.
She died after the fourth episode, and she was the original mother in that. And then evidently, here's some Saturday Night Fever trivia. Ready to go, Sean?
All right, I'll give it a shot.
You ready? Well, I'm more of a, I mean, you've written about Saturday Night Fever. I've obsessed about Saturday Night Fever.
It sounds like you've lived it.
Yeah, so again, you got to bear with me a little bit on this.
We can't see you on the air. You're wearing the white suit
right
now.
Name we see four posters in Tony's room. Name three of the four posters we see in Tony's room during Saturday Night Fever.
There's Farrah Fawcett.
That's one.
Serpico.
That's, well, yeah, Al Pacino. That's two.
And I, and Bruce Lee.
That's three. The fourth one sort of has an interesting connection. It's the Rocky. He has
the
Rocky poster, and of course, directed by John Avildsen, who got fired from Saturday. Do you think that was put there as a sort of a rib on him? Do you think there was a purpose for that?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you. You know, a few months after my article ran on BUR, I got an email from someone purporting to be John Avildsen.
Okay. Oh, I'd love to hear the story. Go ahead.
It was very angry, saying that he was not trying to soften the Tony character, and that he was fired for sleeping with one of the producer's girlfriends.
Were you ever able to?
So I followed up. I wrote back. I said, "You want to get on the record about that? You know, and I'd love to talk to you about
Joe
or Rocky
story.
Or all these movies." And I never heard back from him, and he died recently.
Oh, did he?
So, yeah.
I'm going to disagree with that because, well, I mean, it doesn't ring true to me because here's why: Robert Stigwood would have done what was right for the movie, regardless of what happened on the perimeter, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. It just sounded like a funny old Hollywood guy trying. I thoroughly researched the article. You know, multiple sources were saying why he was fired. You know?
Right. It's like you're a Bostonian, and I've always didn't believe that Babe Ruth called a shot in 1932, and here's the reason why. And I know people love to run down Babe Ruth in Boston because of the curse. I had read that, you know, Charlie Root, who was the pitcher for the Cubs, said that if he would have stand there and gestured out that the next pitch was going to descend, the pitch would have come right at his head. And that rings true to me. That sort of makes sense. So I believe that I'm going to go with that Stigwood was a businessman and is a business. Is he still living, Robert Stigwood?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Yeah, but he would have been a businessman, and I think he would have done what was right for the movie. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about is one of the reasons that Saturday Night Fever is a great movie, it, other than John Travolta, it had no other star power. And you got to give Star Wars the same rub. Here's two biggest movies of 77 and didn't have a huge film star attached to either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, well, you don't bring in any baggage. You know, you've never seen these people before.
Right, right. Like the famous, I guess it was it Paramount that told Coppola, anybody but Brando? And he said, well, I want Brando in the role. So Paramount has got this movie, and I mean, why are they so objectionable to the grittiness and how raw it was? Obviously, they didn't think it could be a commercial family movie. Was that their thought, do you think, Sean?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think they were objecting to it that much. I mean, they released it on Christmas, you know. I can't imagine such a thing ever getting made today. I mean, can you imagine Zac Efron jumping on Selena Gomez in the back of a car, trying to force himself on her?
Or the language. I guess, you know, in the political correct word, it probably doesn't. You're probably right. It doesn't actually work. And to think, I had seen that. I mean, they actually were able to film on the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, which I can't imagine how that wasn't an insurance nightmare, Sean. I can't come to grips with that.
Well, very few movies were filmed in New York back then. Just, I mean, between the unions and the crime and. It was, you know, that was the heyday of every New York movie looked like just like Toronto for some reason.
But I had seen in the DVD that they had shut down. They had to film at midnight. They had between midnight and five to do the filming on the bridge. And actually, they said it was cold as could be up there. They were everybody was freezing and was miserable for the two scenes up there. But you know.
Well, the other really smart thing they did was they put the soundtrack album out, what was it, 6 months before the movie?
You're probably right about that, yeah.
And it was sometime before, so talk about great marketing. You've already got a number one song, and everyone's just waiting to see the movie at that point, you know?
I mean, if I said to you, and again, one of the great things about movies, and especially having like the DVD capabilities now or wherever, is you can go watch your favorite scene over and over and over again. What do you think the defining scene of Saturday Night Fever is? In your eyes, what do you think? If you said you had to pick this scene and say this, if you don't ever watch the movie, you watch this 5-minute bit.
Oh, the dinner table with his family.
Absolutely.
When his dad hits his hair.
I agree. You know what? I have to. It's very funny. My hair. He hits my hair. And the other thing, like I said, yeah, okay, I'll buy that. I just think that the solo dance, you know, you should be dancing, is that defined? Because you figure, again, being a film critic and historian, dancing on the screen was dead after, I mean, West Side Story probably in the early 60s and then till 77, till Fever. There wasn't a whole lot of dancing on the screen, Sean.
Yeah, and the musicals that were being made were these huge budget, you know, colossal flops like Stars and things. You know, Star was, I think, one of them. And,
well, and
you know, it wasn't.
Yeah. And of course,
it was no longer a commercial viable.
Right. And it was there any talk about, you know, because I had heard that was cut back in, that wasn't originally in there. And then Badham said, we have to have this in there somewhere.
No, what it was actually Travolta had say over the final edit of the movie.
Uh huh.
And the one thing he changed, they said he reportedly cried at the first cut because Badham had shot his solo scene the way he shot Night Fever with the constant cutaways to all these other people.
Uh-huh.
And Travolta had trained for months to do all that scene in one take without stopping. And here he's cutting and going and not showing his feet. And so Travolta demanded that they use the master shot that shows him head-to-toe dancing.
Wow, I did not know that.
And that's why that scene is so impressive, because you're watching it, and it ain't a double, and it's not cutting away, and you know it's this one guy dancing for this whole time.
Now, you were only two when Fever came out. I was a teenager, and I do distinctly remember this, is Denny Terrio got all the credit, because he was the trainer of John Travolta, but not the choreographer of Saturday Night Fever. Lester Wilson was the, and on Saturdays during professional wrestling and roller derby, there would be commercials for Lester Wilson said, I'm the choreographer of Saturday Night Fever. And he had his, you know, you could buy his, dance class. I don't remember how you got that, because there was no videotape in 77, but he, you know, and Denny Terrio got a television show, got, of course, Dance Fever.
I was going to say, yeah, Lester Wilson must hate Denny Terrio. He got a whole career out of this.
Yeah, and they said that I choreographed Saturday Night Fever, and Denny Terrio, up to that point in time, Sean, had gotten all the credit for the dancing in Saturday Night Fever, and there was sort of a conflict about that, if I remember that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was selling, I can't exactly remember how he was selling.
8-track?
I guess it 8-track, and then maybe had cards
or book or something.
He had put out something that you could buy to teach you the dance steps from like the Night Fever. I can't remember exactly how that happened.
I'm sure it was like a book or because I know, you know, my mom had the Jane Fonda workout record, and that on the sleeve were all the positions you were supposed to get into.
Yeah, so that, and then of course then the VHS made that but Lester Wilson was selling sort of, I guess, a how-to dance video. Now, I also had heard that the dance floor. Now, do you think it's ironic? Is there something ironic about the critical thing that the 2001 Space Odyssey, which actually was a club, and Joseph Calley and Donna Pascal said they all went together to actually experience the club before the movie.
I'm sure, yeah.
They said that it was really Italian, it was really rough. I mean, it really was as Nick Khan described in the movie, said, because it was like, don't go there and fool around, because then you were going to have a hard time in there. Mm-hmm. But do you think there's sort of an irony that it became a gay club after that? Do you see that it sort of comes full circle a little bit?
Right, yeah. Well, they were stealing the gay music, so it all comes around.
Right. And that was and was it common back then to have like a disco where people could go and then also have like a side bar that was like a strip joint? Was that common?
I always wondered about that. I just felt like I also thought that back then there was just a mandate to get at least one pair of boobs in a movie.
Absolutely, you figure as much. And because I'd
anything rated R from that era, it was always the most gratuitous thing.
Right.
So they just randomly threw a strip club in there just to fulfill a contract or something.
Well, you don't laugh, because I had seen the thing on Caddyshack, and they sort of. Caddyshack said, we need some nudity. We got to figure out a way to get some nudity in Caddyshack. We've got everything else.
Yeah.
We need nudity.
I feel like HBO shows still do that, right?
Well, as one of the great one of the great lines from Seinfeld, Jerry Seinfeld said to Elaine, he goes, people don't mean just fall into bed. This is not Cinemax. I kind of thought that was that's incredibly well written. That's an incredibly well written line.
Well, you notice when The Sopranos got more popular, they started going to the bada bing less.
Repeat that? I didn't.
As The Sopranos got more popular, they started going to the bada bing less.
You know, I never picked up on that. I never got. I see. I don't. Wow. I never got that. Well, that's what Star Wars was missing, evidently, too. They were able to. Because again, I had heard that, though, in a lot of the big disco clubs, there was like a side room for like, you know, entertainment, you know, gentlemen's entertainment. And just like the 2001 Odyssey was. Now, what's there now, Sean? Do you know?
I don't know.
I think it's an office complex or it's an apartment complex, from what I understand. But I believe the paint store is still in business.
Oh, you're kidding. That's wonderful.
I think that it's still there. And, of course, here's another trivia question. In what two scenes were John Travolta's sister and mother?
Oh, it's his sister is giving him the pizza, right?
Right. He gives, yeah. It's a, hey, Tony, two or three? Two is good. And then his mother?
I don't know his mother. What scene his mother was in?
His mother was the paint store customer was waiting for him when he comes back with the paint.
Oh, okay.
That's John Travolta's mother. And says, I'm going to cut you a nice deal on this. I've been waiting here a half hour. And, that was the thing. And, of course, there's only one other really good. Who was the biggest star other than John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever? I'm going to ask that to Sean Burns before we go to break. Who was the biggest star in Saturday Night Fever other than John Travolta?
Fran Drescher.
That is correct. That is, Fran Drescher was the jilted dance partner. Oh, forget this. Before the congratulations on that, by the way.
Sean. Oh, yeah, well, why do they always send me flowers in the morning? Right? That's a great exchange.
And Fran Drescher, of course, is not annoying in two very good movies. She's not really annoying in Saturday Night Fever. And she's surprisingly not annoying in This Is Spinal Tap.
Bobby Fleckman.
As Bobby Fleckman, which is really one of the most underrated funny movies of all time, in my eyes.
Oh, I could recite it from memory, I'll tell you.
You're booked for another show. I can go on for days. You guys are in big trouble. We're going to take a timeout, get our last break here on WDEL. This is
you're listening to WDEL Saturday Hotspot. Here's Frank Gregory.
Well, I'm really pleased to say we got a new keeper on the Saturday Hotspot. It's going to be Sean Burns.
And we're talking about
movies. This is just so much fun. I mean, the passion I have, again, I'm not the movie buff that you are, but when there's a movie I like, I watch it over and over and over again. We're 40 years removed from Saturday Night Fever, and I'm going to ask you an editorial. Would it work coming out today? Why would it work, and why wouldn't it be successful, Sean, in your estimation?
Well, I think the things it speaks to are eternal, you know, is that desire of looking around where you are and wanting to get out and make something better for yourself. But I don't think people today could handle the language or the frankness of the movie. It's really, for a major Hollywood film to be that blunt about sexuality and macho mistreatment of women,
right?
It could never happen now.
Okay. You know what? I tend to half and agree with you. Now, would it be because of public rejection or just that studios don't have the courage to put it out and say, this is what we're going to do and we're going to go ahead with it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see actors wanting to be being that brave with their image, you know, to do some of the stuff Tony does. It's an incredible gamble. Travolta is so charismatic that you accept this character. I mean, the movie is him consistently failing to rise to the occasion in one circumstance after another, and there's this... He carries off this fundamental decency that really isn't on the page.
Right. Now, do you think it works because there wasn't a lot of stars worried about their image to say these things and say, you know, what's my next role?
Yeah, it just feels real. You know, it feels like a slice of life. And I think that's what connects with people to this day, you know.
Because one of the reasons that I said if I was stuck on a desert island, I would pick Saturday Night Fever. Because, again, I love the story, but then the music is uplifting. And then there's a little something for everybody in Saturday Night Fever because it does have some funny parts.
I mean, it's very funny too.
You know, like I stole the line. He goes, you know, when my mother dies, I give you the job. You know, and it's just amazing because again, you think that Karen Lynn Gorney had to think that the sky was the limit for her, and then it just stalled right after Saturday Night Fever.
Well, she's such an unappealing character.
You know, the one casting problem I have in the movie is her. I don't think that Stephanie really worked.
Well, it's interesting because Tony idealizes her out of all proportion, but she's kind of a dim bulb.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes is when she's name dropping Laurence Olivier, and she has no idea who he is except for the Polaroid commercials.
And of course, Tony knows even less.
You know, Tony's like, "Do you think you could get a camera from him at a disco?"
And of course, they disparage David Bowie's sexuality. And then, did you pick up on the reverence when she name drops Joe Namath as the next one out of the out of the bin? Do you think that's by accident? You know, she goes, "David and
David Bowie." Right?
Yeah, and then the faces disparage him as being a homosexual, and then she mentions Joe Namath, and they fall in line in reverence. I guess it's the mid-70s in New York, and you couldn't say anything bad about Joe Namath, so
right.
I guess that's sort of that. But well, Sean, again, I want to thank you for coming on, and again, tell people how they can read your work and hear from you more, please.
Yeah, if you just go to splicedpersonality.com, I keep everything I do all there with links to all my pieces of BUR, North Shore Movies, anyone who wants to hire me.
All right, well, you're booked for further appearances on the Saturday Hotspot, and I'm going to ask you, if you're trapped on a desert island, Sean Burns, what one movie are you going to have with you, and why?
Oh God, that's a tricky. I can't bring my entire DVD shelf.
No, you got one. What one do you go to more often than the others? Go ahead. There's got to be one.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe Rocky. I don't know.
See, my problem with Rocky, and it can be from this area, and you know what killed Rocky for me?
What's that?
2, 3, 4, and 5.
Well, yeah, there's like a separate Rocky and Creed or. Part of a separate movie series.
Well, I didn't think Rocky Balboa was all that bad. I actually thought it was kind of good. I kind of thought that the rub of not having Adrian was actually worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It was just they kind of became superhero movies.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Sean Burns, until we speak again, I want to thank you for your time and keep on dancing with Saturday Night Fever. And if you ever get I heard that the floor was on sale at eBay. I don't know if somebody's got it or it shows back up. Or if you ever get the white suit, I want to come and see it because
Gene
Siskel.
Yeah, well, movie critics love that suit.
Until we talk again, my brother, thank you for your time.
All right, thanks, Frank.
There's Sean Burns on WDEL. We'll be back next Saturday with more of the Saturday Hotspot live on location from Newcastle. Stay with us for information. Wesley football and high school football on your way here on WDEL.